Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. I'm here with Henry and Josh as always. My name's Andrew. And, gentlemen, we are talking together after Arsenal have won a game. How wonderful is that?
It is definitely wonderful. That's the best word for it. Every win is wonderful.
Every win is wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, the stress levels weren't as high this weekend, and I'm not sure whether I liked it or whether I disliked it.
Yeah, there were certainly higher stress levels in the week. That is for sure. I have to say I liked it. I liked having nothing to worry about after the 15th minute of the game. given the general vulnerabilities of Arsenal, it was a very comforting feeling.
I find myself looking for other things to stress about now because I just feel like there's this void in my life where Arsenal would normally stress me out, and they just haven't done it this time. So I don't know how to feel.
Yeah. I feel like I should kind of get an anti-stress ball. Yeah, like instead of something to relieve stress, something to give me stress, just so it keeps my mind occupied because it feels so weird not worrying about Arsenal every night.
I have that almost
on a daily basis as a student, just a kind of going out and looking at my bank balance. That's enough to really get me.
Yes, I bet it is.
or you can just rewatch the Swansea match. I think that'll do the trick.
Yeah, that would.
I'd rather not. I'd rather not.
Just have it named under the file stress. On the yes.
And the Denver Bar transfer deadline day debacle, that can go under stress as well.
Yeah. Or, to be honest, any transfer deadline day other than this latest one can go under stress for Arsenal. Speaking of the non-stress, Arsenal dismantled Everton to some extent, 5-1 in the end. They were 4-0 up. I think it was the 37th minute, was it, that Aubameyang scored? The game was over after 15, 20 minutes. And really, the Gunners played very, very well. So, what are your... Henry, we'll get to you first. What are your initial kind of feelings from the game? Did you enjoy it as much as everybody else did?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. And that Armenian international's pretty good, isn't he?
Yeah,
I mean,
not bad.
He was everywhere. I mean, not only did he provide 3 assists, I'm pretty sure he was... our most successful individual in terms of interceptions and tackles as well. So the Mourinho effect is playing a very, very prominent role here at Arsenal, it seems.
Is it so much more just kind of joy-giving that Mkhitaryan was so bad under Mourinho and now, just a week later, with a different manager and a different team, suddenly he's loving life? It just makes everything better, doesn't it, to see a Mourinho influence fail?
I mean, we've had it at Manchester City. Well, Lukaku also had a good season at Everton, although his first touch is halfway down the M1 the majority of the time.
But for those not in England,
Kevin De Bruyne, Mkhitaryan, M1 is and Lukaku all doing well.
Yeah, for those not in England, the M1 is a motorway that is. Not especially close to Manchester, where Lukaku's touch should be.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
I've seen it a lot on Twitter, that analogy, but I thought it was deserved of inclusion.
It was a very accurate analogy, if a little confusing for those not in the near geography.
Apologies.
Yeah, but obviously Mohamed Salah, who's turned into Lionel Messi, he's also another ex-Mourinho player, and De Bruyne obviously as well. So essentially all the best players in the Premier League are now players who were Mourinho players and now aren't Mourinho players. So I think it's fairly obvious, if you want to be a successful footballer, just go and sign for Mourinho for about a year, sacrifice that year, and then move on and you'll be brilliant. It's just guaranteed. Josh, what do you think of the game?
I thought it was wonderful. I mean, like Henry said, seeing Mkhitaryan, and this is even better than I remember. I used to watch him at Dortmund all the time because that's when Dortmund was really a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, very much so.
And he, like Henry said, he didn't just assist. And by the way, every single chance he created was an assist. he has now matched Alexis's assist total for the season.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is just beautiful. He did it in 90 minutes, what Alexis couldn't do in 1,500 minutes. and yeah, he had 7 ball-winning plays, 4 tackles, 3 interceptions. Only Cuco Martina over on Everton could match those numbers. It was sensational. He was everywhere. And I think one of the biggest takeaways I got from it was how positively this is going to help Mesut Ozil, who I think there was a Mesut Ozil. I think obviously he's a fantastic player, but there are times where I don't think he does so well in the spotlight. And I think that Mkhitaryan is going to do really well to sort of steal the spotlight away from him and give him more freedom to do his thing.
Yeah, I mean, although Ozil didn't actually record an assist or a goal, he still had a major part to play in at least the first three. And he still created more. He still created more chances than anybody else on the pitch. Anyway, he's always. Yeah, as always. I mean, it's a little bit kind of like it kind of becomes ridiculous. But he's creating about 3 or 4 chances at a minimum every game, which for most players is an outstanding level. For him, it's just average. Like that was an average Ozil game, really.
Two or three, honestly, is like, well, why couldn't he have done more? We've seen him create 8, 9 chances.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you said, it's just kind of assumed at this point that he'll get that many.
Yeah, he is a pretty awesome player. So what we're going to do for, because there's obviously lots of talking points from this game, we're just going to work through the goals, the 5 Arsenal goals, and we'll touch on the Everton goal as well later. And we'll just discuss how they happened, what players were involved, things like that, and then we'll let the conversation flow from there, depending on what topics we want to discuss, how bad Granit Xhaka was, and so on, so on, so on. the first goal was a really lovely move. Ozil picks the ball up deep in the inside right channel, plays it into Aubameyang. Aubameyang clips a little kind of cute ball to Mkhitaryan, who plays it across, and Ramsey finishes nicely. Henry, were you impressed with the interplay between the new signings, particularly Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang?
Oh, the pass, I tweeted about it on our Twitter account. The pass from Aubameyang, I'm pretty sure he doesn't even look. It's just around the corner, and you can see the telepathy's just there. It was just instinct, and it was really, really nice, really, really slick. And it was Wenger ball at its very best, you could argue.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because he doesn't look, but he does see Mkhitaryan kind of run across his face about 2 seconds earlier in the move, and I'm pretty sure as soon as he sees him kind of drift across the penalty area, he knows exactly where he's going. So as soon as he gets the ball, he knows exactly where Mkhitaryan is. He doesn't even need to have a look at him. He's certainly a relationship I would say that is going to be very exciting to watch between now and the end of the year, and hopefully for a few more seasons to come. The other thing I want to touch on, the cross, Josh, wasn't a precise cross in terms of picking somebody out. It was just one of them where Mkhitaryan basically said, I'm just going to kind of shoot across the goal and put it in a dangerous area, hit it hard and see what happens. And Arsenal don't really do that on a regular basis, do they? They're more try and be a bit more precise. And because they don't have the size, I guess, other than Giroud, it doesn't really work. Was that a nice addition to see, really, to a greater attacking Arsenal?
Yeah, those are the kinds of crosses that Bellerin tries a lot, and I think they're the kinds of crosses that Bellerin's getting talked out of trying because he does it and there's never anybody there. And, I mean, we saw that a lot when Ramsey was out and when Lacazette kind of played in his self-prescribed deeper role. But it is great to see that, because that's such a useful weapon. And with players like Ramsey and Aubameyang who get those late runs into the box, and I think Lacazette will catch on, That's definitely a tool that we need to utilize more often now that it can be so much more effective, because you know it gives defenses such a headache because they have to make split second decisions and you're just opening them up for a world of mistakes whenever you have to make split second decisions, as we've seen with our own defense. Not exactly great with the reflexes kind of thing, but opposing defenses will struggle with that too. If we keep putting them in situations where they can make mistakes, those mistakes will happen. And you know, whenever it works out like it did and it doesn't even require a mistake, then all the better.
Yeah, and the speed of the cross as well makes a big difference, doesn't it? Because if you're if you're a defender and the cross comes in, maybe it's a bit slower, you have time to set yourself. Whereas if it really flashes into the box, it can be quite disorientating. And as we saw with Mangala trying to sort his feet out, it can be quite difficult to do it when it's at such pace. It's certainly nice to see. I know for those that have probably been watching all the YouTube highlights of Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, you'll see a lot of their goals come from one or the other two flashing a low cross into the box and the other one being able to find space in between the central defenders. And that it did look quite like a Dortmund goal, really, to that extent. And certainly Ramsey, like you say, he has a knack of being able to find space in that penalty area. There's a reason he scores so many goals from midfield, is because he has that kind of Frank Lampard type mental ability to be able to find space in the penalty area. One final thing I'd like to touch on was the rotation of movement. This was evident throughout the whole game, wasn't it, Henry, that Mesut Ozil and Iwobi and Mkhitaryan, they were always moving and interchanging their position all the time. It made it very hard to defend, didn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely did. I mean, that's the cool thing. I mean, during the player ratings, I made a statement. I don't really know what formation we went with. I mean, there were times it looked like a 4-2-3-1, a 4-3-3. The fact that we have, four or five, almost even six guys up front that can so fluidly change positions is just an amazing weapon. And I mean, obviously, defenses, you can't focus on one guy because he might be on the other side of the pitch next time you set up for defense, which just, and it's such a diverse array of players. I mean, between Ozil and Mkhitaryan, if you've got one or the other coming at you alternating like every 5-10 minutes, you have to readjust your game every time you see someone different. And that's a tough ask for any defender.
Yeah. You can't just go man on man and in defensively, can you say, oh, well, you know, my man's Mesut Ozil or my man's Mkhitaryan, because they're moving all over the places. It's impossible to track. Let's move on to the second goal. Henry, what's going on with Arsenal's brilliance from set pieces?
I don't know. Was it a Granit Xhaka set piece or was it a Mesut Ozil set piece? I'm pretty sure it was an Ozil set piece.
It was an Ozil set piece, but in Xhaka's fairness, the majority of his corners that he did take were pretty decent, actually. Which is you?
Monreal hit the bar off one, which would have made it 5-0.
Yeah, and Xhaka is not a good corner taker, but really
he is now.
Yeah, he is now. He was on Saturday.
Get it in there, Josh. Get it in.
Yeah. How come Arsenal was suddenly the most threatening team from corners in the history of the world?
I mean, a lot of it in years past, we were very prolific from set pieces because of Olivier Giroud. But to be perfectly honest, I have no idea. I think it's one of those that the second goal I'm talking about now, just get that flick on, win the first ball and see what happens, because then it's a bit of pinball in the area. Then obviously we've come out on top with Koscielny scoring and Aubameyang throwing up his arms in disgust at our captain nicking his first goal from him.
That is, by the way, a reference to a BBC Sport article that said apparently Aubameyang was annoyed that Koscielny nicked the ball when he was just celebrating a goal. But there we go. Modern day journalism for you. We're all a part of it, and it is useless. I really like the run that Mustafi made, because he was extremely committed to getting across the front post. It wasn't one of those kind of, he didn't just kind of meander into an area. He at first dummied to the far post and then really darted quite dynamically to the front post. And that's something that I guess Josh, Arsenal have started to use more with Monreal as well.
Yeah, and just to jump on that Mustafi thing, it's amazing how good he is with his head. And I remember when we first signed him, people were worried because he was too short. He wouldn't be an aerial threat.
Is he 6 foot flat? Is that what it
is? I think he's 6 foot, yes.
Yeah.
Every single match, he's winning the most aerial duels of anyone out there. It's remarkable. And to combine that with the athleticism that he has, I mean, most of the time you get these aerially dominant people, they're not as quick as Mustafi. They can't make those runs like he's done, like Monreal has done. Mm. So for him to be able to make those runs and still win the header is such a useful tool, as we saw against Everton, and as we'll see plenty more, and as we've seen in the past. It's such a wonderful thing to see. And as far as those overlapping runs from Monreal, I they're wonderful to see because you always see them developing and you just know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I wonder how long it's going to last, though. Eventually, teams are going to start recognizing it and we're going to have to do something different. But, hey, let's enjoy it while it's working.
Yeah. It's a bit, Wenger may say it's a bit agricultural, but you can get free goals from set pieces. It's something worth investing time in. Sam Allardyce has built a whole career on it. So it's worth being able to have a threat from corners and free kicks and stuff. And suddenly Arsenal have found one. I don't quite know what's happened, but there we go.
It feels like all of a sudden Arsene Wenger just said, you know what, let's try to kick it over that first line of defense rather than kicking it straight into him. I think back to Oxlade-Chamberlain, even Ozil and Xhaka, when they were doing corners, it always went to the first guy.
Theo.
And it made...
Why did Theo take so many corners?
It never made any sense. And,
no.
You know, you think about Xhaka's strength is long passing. There's no reason he can't get the ball over the first guy. I feel like it was a tactical choice because we see him now floating the ball into such dangerous areas with ease. So I don't think that he all of a sudden learned how to take corners. I think there was a change in set-piece philosophy because it doesn't make sense that a guy with that powerful of a foot, couldn't get it over the first defender.
Traditionally, I am usually worried about Arsenal conceding from counter-attacks when they have a corner. I'm actually more worried about the other team scoring than I am excited that Arsenal might score whenever they have a corner or free kick. But at the moment,
yes.
At the moment, I can't wait for him. Here we go. Nacho Monreal. He's Arsenal's most threatening attacker at the moment. Let's move on to the third goal. I think this was the perhaps not the most exciting goal. We'll get onto that one in a minute. But I would say this was the nicest goal in terms of, because actually it's Mustafi and Bellerin win the ball and they're in like they're kind of on the edge of their own area to the right hand side. Through Mesut Ozil and Alex Iwobi, it ends up coming all the way to the other pitch on the left hand side. And then eventually Aaron Ramsey hits a shot from the edge of the area that's deflected past Jordan Pickford. And it takes about 10 seconds to get from essentially one corner to the other corner and then for Ramsey's shot. Do you think, Henry, that Arsenal are, with the additions of Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, obviously, potentially adapting more of a fast-flowing counter-attacking style that they seem to have slowed a little bit more recently?
I think it would be in our best interests to do so because, obviously, we were speaking before we went live and I was saying teams as a general rule of thumb will sit very deep against Arsenal and not allow them to play with open free space. And even though Sam Allardyce came out after the game and said that they wanted to play a similar game, or they wanted to implement a similar game plan to Swansea, they didn't. They were very open, possibly because of that first 5 minutes, and that might have actually played into Arsenal's hands, making the game seem a little more open, if that was intentional or not. But I think it would be in our best interest to play a more counter-attacking game, especially with Aubameyang's pace. I mean, his pace alone is going to create more space for Ozil and Mkhitaryan to pull the strings in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it, didn't you, when, I know it wasn't a goal, but when he absolutely blistered Everton, kind of searing down that left channel, and then the shot was saved by Pickford, but he is just electrically quick, isn't he? And obviously Ozil and Mkhitaryan and even Xhaka and Ramsey and Wilshere, whoever you want to throw in there, in terms of their passing ability, they're going to be able to find him on slightly more direct balls if the opposition are pushed high up the pitch for whatever reason. Josh, what do you think about Arsenal's ability to be this kind of quick strike type offence, I guess, and score early in moves rather than taking 15, 20, 30 passes to slowly break down teams?
It used to drive me crazy earlier in the season. There were so many times where we'd launch a counterattack and just past the halfway line, all the defense would have caught up already. I mean, that's what happens, though, when Ozil is primarily in charge of leading a counterattack. He's a fantastic passer. He's not a good runner. He shouldn't be the guy driving the ball. We have quicker guys to do that. And the problem, too, is he didn't have that outlet to find that would be a quicker option. because Lacazette played deeper and he's not as quick as Aubameyang.
No.
And Ramsey had been out, so he wasn't there making those runs. And it was just, there really was no counterattacking threat earlier in the season. But now there's going to be tons of it, like you said, because there are so many passers and so many people with the ability to make those runs, specifically Aubameyang, as again we saw against Everton. So definitely, I mean, we're talking about all the different ways Arsenal can score now. We talked about set pieces. Counterattack has been unlocked too with these additions.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I think one thing that was really interesting was Aubameyang only had, was it 27 touches of the ball? Or I can't quite remember the exact mm-hmm. figure. It was in the 20s and it was very low. And I think that's just a principle thing of Lacazette and Sanchez was the same. They always want to come short and get the ball to feet, turn and then beat a defender. And Aubameyang is not about that at all. He's so much more interested in spinning in behind and running off the defender. And even if that means that he makes five of those runs and only one of them he gets found on, he only needs one or two a game to score a goal, as we saw. And I guess really that's what he's about, isn't he? He's about getting in behind. He's not going to come short, and that will help Arsenal's counter attack because he's willing to not touch the ball in the whole move until the final shot or final pass or something, and score the goal. Henry, I'll ask you about the fourth goal. Obviously, the Dortmund connection was strong between Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan again. It was offside, so we should kind of temper expectations a little bit. But I assume, like the rest of us, you were extremely excited to see the two new signings link up as they did.
Oh, yeah, I was excited because it was such a classy finish, that little dink. I mean, we've become so familiar with Mesut Ozil's driving the ball into the ground in order to beat the keeper. Well, that was delicate. That was beautiful. It was a really nice finish. And as you say, he only had, from my memory, he only had two chances and he took one. I'll take that conversion rate any day of the week.
Yeah, he had that shot that was blocked, didn't he?
On that counter that you were just referencing off the left-hand side.
From Aaron Ramsey's cutback.
Or was it three? Two or three?
Yeah,
I mean,
but I think
one every two
I mean,
or three,
even,
I'll take
even,
that.
Even the counter wasn't really that bad an effort because it was quite a tight angle. And Pickford had all the goal, the near post covered. And then the other one was blocked, that I can remember anyway. And I think it was on target before then. So really, it wasn't like he was wasting good chances. And that chance, like you said, I mean, that was clinical, wasn't it? And I guess, like, when you see maybe Giroud or Theo or even Lacazette to some extent in that situation, you're not that confident they're going to score. As soon as Aubameyang got onto that ball and the flag wasn't up, I never doubted his ability to score. Josh, what do you think about the newfound Dortmund connection and the fact that Arsenal are going German?
I love it. I actually almost more so love the fact that he was so offside, because we've been screwed so much on offside calls that to see one go so in our favor, even if it didn't mean anything. I mean, we had the game wrapped up at that point. It was still such a satisfying feeling, especially because Aubameyang scoring on his debut on the connection that we just created in January. It's such a satisfying, everything about that goal was so satisfying.
Yes. No, that it was certainly the, if it wasn't that, the best goal, I think the third goal was the best goal, but certainly that was the most exciting goal, just in terms of, holy crap, we've got good players. What's going on? We've got genuinely world class players now. It seems. See, I'm genuinely buzzing, and this feels weird. I'm usually bemoaning Arsenal. Henry, what did you think about the fifth goal? Obviously, Mkhitaryan pulls it back for Aaron Ramsey. It was Ramsey's hat trick, so I guess we should give him some credence, shouldn't we? You are the Welsh contingent, so what did you think about your compatriot?
I thought he played very well, and I thought it was, in a nutshell, the perfect Ramsey performance. If you want to know his strengths as a player, watch that game. Late runs into the penalty area. Again, relatively anonymous in build-up play. He's the one you want finishing those moves in the penalty area. As you mentioned earlier, you made a reference to Frank Lampard. We're not talking about two players on the same level, but we're talking about two very similar players in terms of style.
Yeah.
If there's one thing you would ask of Jack Wilshere when comparing him to Aaron Ramsey, is you would say, I want that goal contribution, yeah, not necessarily from assists, but I want more goals coming from you. That's the one area where Aaron Ramsey certainly has the edge over Wilshere, and I think it's probably why he's going to keep Wilshere out the team if we continue with this formation going forward.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, certainly I know Wenger has challenged Wilshere in terms of his goal output in the past, and Ramsey has he's really mastered the ability to find space in the penalty area, especially from crosses and cutbacks and things like that. And I know Wenger in his press conference afterwards was saying that he's improved his finishing. He's a lot more confident now when the ball comes to him in terms of striking the ball. And that was really evident. Even the deflected one, the second one, that was still a fairly decent strike. This one was a very, very good finish. The ball came at him quick, and instead of trying to, you know, swing his leg through it and just kick it as hard as he could, he steered it into that bottom corner, which was very composed, and he knew exactly what he was doing. Josh, I know you're a big Ramsey fan. Do you think that he now is going to establish himself, at fitness pending, as the leading centre midfielder in the squad?
I thought he already had. I mean, I honestly...
From his return from injury, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I think the fifth goal was my favourite just because they made it look so easy, and there was nothing about that was easy. I mean, Mkhitaryan had to pick him out, and Ramsey hit it first time perfectly. That's where it had to be. He didn't have that much space to get it into, and he put it right where it had to be. Going back to what you said about goal output, Wilshere's been terrific with the team. He absolutely has, but whenever you bring back Ramsey and he scores a hat trick, he scores three goals on three attempts. Wilshere can't beat that just by positive performances. He has to have some sort of statistical output if he wants to fight back into the formation as it is. I do think that there are ways to fit them both in. It wouldn't be easy, but if it's between Ramsey and Wilshere, I think Ramsey should be the go-to no matter the situation.
Yeah, I think most people would agree. I actually believe, probably in terms of just talent, I think Wilshere is probably the more talented player. And I think in terms of potential and ceiling, Wilshere, again, is better. I think if they could both have their careers again in terms of fitness, I would and you were to give them a full bill of health, I would expect Wilshere to develop into the better player. But in terms of right now, at their respective abilities right now, Ramsey is definitely a stronger influence on this team, particularly from his goals, but also from the running that he gets through. He just covers so much ground.
Yeah.
And sometimes he's a little bit ill-disciplined in his positioning, and that is an area of his game that does need to be refined, particularly against the big teams.
One thing I've always really appreciated about Ramsey is I feel like he's at his deadliest later in games because he just has fitness that's out of this world. And when other teams... when they're shutting off, he's at his best. He doesn't seem to tire, and that's such a useful weapon. Go ahead.
No, I always get worried like watching him, because he'll go and kind of scamper after some ball in the fullback in the right channel. I'm like, wait, you're gonna get tired. Like, be more reserved in your running. And then at the 86th minute, he's still harassing some poor old centre half because he's bombarded his way up. His engine is remarkable. He really does. He really does cover the ground, and he's deceptively quick as well, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree.
You noticed it against Swansea, or I did certainly. He looked a bit. He just looked a bit rusty coming back. And the one thing that really gave it away for me was that usually he'd be able to kind of surge past the player. But he wasn't doing that at all against Swansea. He didn't seem to have that same kind of explosive burst. Whereas on Saturday, it looked like it was there again. It looked like he had that kind of just that extra gear to be able to separate himself from those around him. The final thing to say on Ramsey, Henry, I'll throw this to you. Do you think that if he proceeds to have a good end to the season, that he will be a target for other clubs? He only has 18 months remaining on his contract, and we are here again with Arsenal and their short contracts.
I think it should be a priority of ours to extend his contract as well. Midfield depth is, well, depends on how you look at it. It's one of our strong points in terms of depth when you look at the fact we have, on paper, Jack Wilshere, Aaron Ramsey, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Granit Xhaka, Mohamed Elneny. You could argue that Mesut Ozil and Mkhitaryan could play deeper, possibly, and that they are going to play deeper in this system, I presume, because Mkhitaryan and Ozil have each other, and they will share the spotlight. But I think it's essential we keep Ramsey. I think his qualities are so unique, especially within this squad. I think it would be calamitous to let him go, or to sell him, or to see his contract expire.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, it's the way of the modern world where players have all the power, and we obviously don't know if Ramsey wants to leave or not. I think it was fairly obvious with Alexis Sanchez that he wanted to leave Arsenal. With Ramsey, you don't really get that feeling. But if he did want to leave, he's certainly in a position where he could engineer that for himself fairly easily, especially if he has a good end to the season, which, fitness permitting, he should be able to. Josh, let's talk about the Everton goal, specifically Ziad Kolasinac. Some people are blaming him for the goal, some people aren't blaming him for the goal, but generally he didn't look very good in that second half when he came off an action on Real. Are you worried about his performances, or do you just think he's just getting a bit of bad luck, maybe?
I think worried is a bit strong of a word. I mean, I always joke about how there is no such thing as acclimation. I mean that in the sense that Arsene Wenger, I think, overdoes how much he weans players into the Premier League. But we have to remember about Kolasinac. He is an immensely talented defender, attacker. He can do all of it. And he is incredibly strong and deceptively quick. And, you know, coming over to the Premier League and doing so well and then getting dropped from the team because somebody else just outdid him. I mean, he wasn't at fault whenever he got dropped. It's just that Monreal was so damn good that you couldn't take him out. I think it's done a toll on his confidence, and I do think that not having a winter break has kind of... I mean, I do think that throws people off. I think it throws him off and Lacazette off. It's tough whenever you go from having a winter break to having the most fixtures of the season in that former winter break. Kolasinac is going to be just fine. He's going to come back strong, and he's going to, you know... He's got really a cookie-cut future ahead of him where Monreal's getting older. He's not going to last there much longer. And Kolasinac will be right there to pick up the pieces. So present day, I would say I'm a tad concerned because I really just want to see the best of him again because it's such a thrill to see him tackling players with no regard for his own safety. It's truly a thrilling experience. But I don't think that this form is going to last much longer, this poor form. But he was remarkably bad against Everton. I don't fully blame him for the goal. I mean, I think he could have done more, but so could a lot of people.
Yeah, I hope your optimism transpires to reality.
It always does.
It always does. Certainly, he is a talented player. I wonder if Wenger just doesn't really like him and doesn't really trust him. It wouldn't really surprise me if that was true, if I'm honest. I know Wenger was the player who signed him, but the manager who signed him, but Wenger also apparently signed Lucas Perez, and he never liked or trusted him. So it wouldn't shock me that much if it was a very similar situation here. Henry, do you blame Kolasinac for the goal specifically, and then also are you concerned by his performance, or again, like Josh, do you just think it's a little bit of a dip in confidence?
Yeah, I think the mistakes he's made throughout the season, but they've been kind of shoved under the rug by everything else that he's done from a positive standpoint. For the goal, I thought you could have argued he could have jumped higher, but then to counter that argument, you had Nias in front of him and Calvert-Lewin, I'm pretty sure, climbing on top of him to head home. I think he'll be fine. I just think Nacho Monreal is the superior option at the moment, considering form. And I don't think there's too much reason to be concerned as of now. I think he's in a similar position to Lacazette. Both players are going through a dip in form, but I see no reason as to why both can't pull through and have very successful Arsenal careers.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree. It will be very interesting to see, you kind of alluded it to there, Josh, how Wenger deals with this position in the summer and next season, because Monreal is obviously getting older, and as his legs go, he will struggle more and more to play fullback. And Kolasinac is the natural replacement, but does Wenger trust him? And then obviously you've got the curveball of Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Is he a left back or is he a midfielder? Or what's I don't think anyone really knows what's going to happen, but it will be interesting to see what he does.
I do think that, I mean, this is what we wanted. We want to get the best out of every position. And the way you do that is you have options that are on a very similar playing field in terms of talent and ability, and you let the best man win. It's not cruel. It's not the wrong way to do things. We're just not used to having that. Most teams have that. It's just that Arsenal's kind of avoided that. They've kind of fell into a comfort zone where they, you know, Arsene Wenger's got his favorite players at certain positions, and he just lets them have their career, have their fun, and doesn't really push them. Now things are different. I mean, I didn't expect Monreal to step up the way that he did, but I do think a big part of him stepping up was being propelled by Kolasinac looking so effective early on. He knew that he had to step up, and that's exactly what you want. You know, I'm a big Kolasinac fan, and I'm kind of bummed he's not in the starting 11, but it's the team first, and the team's getting the best that they can out of that position right now.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. Certainly, it's not, maybe it's harsh, but it's not mean. It's not unfair necessarily. It's just the way that football clubs work. It could be having competition within a squad is extremely important. That's why you have depth and variety and a number of players that can play in a number of positions, because you need to be able to be flexible throughout a season, and you need to be able to push the players who are in the starting 11 to make sure that they're maintaining the level of performance that is expected of them. At the moment, Monreal is certainly maintaining that level. Another player who has been criticised for not reaching that level regularly, but I think reached it on Saturday, was Alex Iwobi. Henry, what did you make of Iwobi's performance on Saturday? Were you more pleased, I guess, than what he has put in recent weeks?
Yeah, I was pleased in the fact that he's come in for a lot of criticism, much like a lot of players in recent weeks. And much like Ramsey, he wasn't a real prominent figure in much of the build-up play, and I think that again suits him. There's less of a spotlight on him, and I think it will really help him playing with such quality players. But I do think his position in the team moving forward is uncertain, because I think you could argue that one of Jack Wilshere or Alexander Lacazette could take his place in the team because of the flexibility that we have as a team, especially in attack.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Josh, what did you make of his display? You've been a traditional Iwobi hater, certainly.
I think hater is a bit strong. I hate his form. I don't hate who he is as a player. I think if we can get the most out of Iwobi, he provides, you know, we were talking about Ramsey, how he sort of provides something that's really unique. I think Iwobi can do the exact same thing. It's weird to see an attacking player so capable of using his strength to keep hold of the ball. He, against Everton, he did so well putting his body between the defender and the ball, and then making a burst from that. Once the defender committed to trying to win the ball, he just sort of pushed off of that. And he did it a couple times, and it just made me realize that this is sort of his thing. It's his forte. And if we can really sort of iron out the kinks in his game, he's still young enough that we should have complete faith in this happening, then he's really going to be a special player. Now, if he maintains his place in the starting 11, I don't know. I don't think one game's enough to win over this is going to sound terrible, but a season of disappointment. and I do think that Wilshere and Lacazette are more deserving of the place. But again, this is like the Kolasinac thing. This is what you want. You want to have
absolutely
just the best that you can have. And I don't think that Iwobi is that just yet, but I'm very enthused by his performance against Everton.
Yeah, and I think Wenger showed a lot of faith in him by selling Walcott. Very much like he showed faith in Welbeck by selling Giroud. He's happy to say, you know, I've got these players and I trust them, and Iwobi's one of them.
Can I elaborate on that point, comparing Walcott to Iwobi? I think they're actually very different players, whereas Walcott is a finisher, I don't think Wilby is very much. He's not a winger. He's very much a creative midfielder. But as Josh said, there are drawbacks to his game, which we can hopefully iron out. But he is very much in the Mkhitaryan Ozil mould. He's very much someone who wants to link up play with intricate passes at the edge of the area. Very rarely is he going to beat someone for pace and then finish in the bottom corner, much like Theo did, sparingly granted. But I think it's difficult to place Iwobi at the moment. I think he's someone who in time could possibly be a very good link-up player. But right now, I think comparing Walcott and Iwobi as players simply because they played in a relatively similar position isn't necessarily fair.
No, I agree on that completely in terms of their styles and their abilities and their strengths and their weaknesses. I'm more in terms of where will Wenger play them and how Wenger sees them. I think he very much sees them as rivals for the same position, is that kind of inside winger role.
That's a fair point. I would agree with that as well. I would agree with that.
Yeah, but they certainly play the positions very differently. And I think Iwobi is more of a Wenger player, isn't he? He's more intelligent on the ball. His spatial awareness is far better. Yeah. He's much more creative, like you said, and his link-up play is a lot better. Someone, I can't remember who it was, someone said on Twitter maybe that it would be interesting to see him in a slightly deeper role where his lack of end product isn't as exposed. And I do think that would be interesting to see him play in a kind of central midfield role where he can pick up the ball from deep, he beats a couple of players and then plays a pass on. I wonder if that...
He has been played in midfield before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... I mean, it would be a similar experiment to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in a weird way. Except much like Oxlade-Chamberlain is a much better comparison to Theo Walcott because they're both players who are much more comfortable using their pace rather than their footballing brain per se. I mean, if you look at the game for Liverpool against Manchester City, that game was much more suited to Oxlade-Chamberlain, especially when you compare that game to Liverpool-Swansea, where Swansea parking the bus was a nightmare for Alex simply because intricate passes around the penalty area aren't his forte.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. It will be very interesting to see how Iwobi's development progresses because, as we know, Wenger is apparently a genius with young players, even though he's developed almost none in the last few years. But we never know. We never know. Iwobi may end up being a decent player. I hope so. Is there anything else you would like to discuss about the 5-1 win?
No.
Not really?
No. Wonderful. We will come back after the break and we will discuss a myriad of different Twitter questions, specifically focusing on the starting lineup. So we have all come up with our own ideal 11s, and because we are all footballing geniuses, they are all correct. And we will fully agree on all of them because, you know, this is football fandom and everybody agrees, don't they? So we will see you in just a minute where controversy will ensue. Hello and welcome to the second part of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. And we have been, relatively, we've been inundated with Twitter questions from many of our listeners. So thank you very much for those questions, firstly. We will do our best to answer all of them as well as we can. A lot of them have been based around lineups, specifically whether we think it's possible to fit certain players into lineups and whether we think Wenger will fit certain players into that. So we've got this one from Idirima Tocconi. I apologise for my pronunciation. At Toxic Though says, do you think Wenger would ever fit Lacazette and Oba in the same starting lineup? We've got this one from Vi17 at V Dianope. He says, can we fit Jack Wilshere and Aaron Ramsey into the same starting 11? My suggestion would be to move Ozil to the left, Mkhitaryan to the right, and relegate Iwobi to the bench. We've got this one from Nadav1 at Nadavone_. He says, how well will Laka and Oba work together? Could we play a 4-4-2 with Laka as a second striker? Dylan Murphy says, do you think Oba will replace Laka? So there's lots of questions about what Arsenal's 11 should be. So to answer as many of those questions as possible, we are going to try and come up with what we believe are our ideal 11s. How should we do this? Let's go position by position. So, Henry, I'll start with you. Who is your goalkeeper for your ideal 11?
It's Matt Macey. No, I'm just kidding. It's Petr Cech. Granted, he's not as good as he once was, but as I said to you guys in the break, he's still a lot more dependable, I would say, than David Ospina, who is intermittently spectacular. So Petr Cech would be my starting goalkeeper.
I agree. Josh, are you with us on the Czech hype?
Since I can't choose Wojciech Szczesny anymore, yes, I'm with you on Petr Cech.
Right. Back three or back four is the first question to ask. Or another strange formation.
Considering the formation I want to play, I'm going to play a back four.
Yeah.
Yeah, likewise, back four.
Yeah, I'm back four. So, Henry, do you want to go to your four defenders? I suspect they're all the same, but...
Hector Bellerin kind of picks himself, not necessarily because of his scintillating form, but more so because of the lack of options. Mustafi and Koscielny, although they can both be rash, both offer fantastic athleticism. And Nacho Monreal, if he's fit, picks himself at the moment. Fantastic at intercepting the ball high up the field. And I don't know who's going to score our goals when he's off the field. So,
I agree with all of them. Josh, are you the same?
Yeah, I tried to talk myself into putting Kolasinac at left back, but you can't take out Monreal.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Right, this I suspect is where it gets a little bit interesting. Josh, I'll come to you first. Who is in your midfield? Well, give us the structure of your midfield first, and then the personnel.
I have a 4-3-3, and I changed this at the last second. I had a 4-4-2, but I switched to a 4-3-3, mostly with Tottenham in mind, because I think we need more of a midfield presence. And I have Wilshere Xhaka-Ramsey, because this still hasn't been tested, and I really do think it could be something if we just give it a chance. There's, you know, Xhaka's not the most athletic, but when you put Wilshere and Ramsey around him, there's enough athleticism there that I think we can have a presence in the midfield that we so desperately need. I mean, you think back to the last time we faced Tottenham, and we really controlled the midfield, and it was with a very similar midfield setup, so it can definitely work.
Yeah, I think that will be a common hope of many other people. Henry, what is your... Well, again, give us your midfield structure and then the people that you're going to play there.
I mean... For me, I'm going to play two, almost in a deeper central midfield role. And it's very tough. One of my decisions is incredibly tough. Aaron Ramsey picks himself after the last game. But I think, as I've mentioned throughout this entire podcast, it seems he offers such unique qualities. And I think he fits quite well into the system that I believe we are trying to implement as well. But I think... I'd be happy with either or Xhaka or Elneny, because I think they both bring different qualities to the team. It's just Xhaka can be incredibly frustrating, but then simultaneously, Elneny, I think it's possibly harsh to say he's limited, but he is limited as a player.
Yep.
But I think it's a toss-up between those two to start alongside Aaron Ramsey for me.
I'm going to go something slightly different. I am going to go with the deep two as I'm essentially not really playing a formation, but I'll get onto that in a minute.
Yeah.
Basically, just have a deep two. One of them will be Aaron Ramsey, like you said, with a clear instruction to not maraud as freely as he often does.
Mm.
The other one will be Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Simply because I've just had enough of Granit Xhaka and I just don't want him. Elneny's limited, like you said. Wilshere doesn't offer the defensive contribution and the defensive protection needed. And I'm intrigued to see how good Maitland-Niles could be. So I don't actually think... I think Xhaka is a better player now, but I think Maitland-Niles could be a significantly better player in 2 or 3 or maybe 4 years. And I'd like to see him given a run of 2 or 3 months to in the starting 11 to have a go. What do you think, Henry?
For me, I'm intrigued by what he can do as well. We've seen him at left back, but I'm pretty sure everyone's been harping on about the fact that he's our solution as a holding midfielder per se, but he's been a winger for the majority of his career, if I'm not mistaken. Whether he brings the presence that we need, you could argue Xhaka, neither Xhaka or Elneny bring the presence that we need either. But maybe during this trying time, I would not try and experiment with the team, but I would certainly love to see what he can do. And I'm all for youth in general, but maybe not now.
Yeah, I'm certainly not saying he's the solution. I would just be intrigued to see if he could be the solution, especially before the summer, in which if he isn't the solution, I would argue that defensive midfield is probably the biggest need that needs to be addressed.
In the summer, but, I would agree.
Yeah, but you never know what you have in Maitland-Niles until you try it, do you? So,
precisely.
So that's kind of my main reasoning. Plus, he's quick. And and I've had enough of watching Xhaka labour around the midfield, failing to get to ball.
Have you seen Milk turn faster?
Yeah, I can see Josh shaking his head and now rolling his eyes at me and Henry's derogatory remarks to his brother, Granit Xhaka.
You always have to drop in slights against Xhaka, even when they're not necessary. You just drop them in there.
Yeah, I've just grown so tired of him. I just can't be bothered anymore.
I've grown tired of Iwobi too, but you don't hear me crying about it every time I get a chance.
Right then, so Josh, you've got front three then. So who is your front three?
I mean, it's Ozil, Aubameyang, and Mkhitaryan, but kind of what you said, I want to point out the same with my formation. It's a formation in the sense that you have to put one on paper, but Wilshere, Ramsey, Mkhitaryan, Ozil are all obviously going to interchange. They're going to go side to side, front to back. It's a 4-3-3 on paper only. It's not going to stay like that. I don't think you can tell Ramsey. I don't want to see restrictions put on Ramsey. We've tried that before. I don't think it worked well. He thrives in his freedom. I think you leave him to do his thing no matter what formation you're in.
Yeah, Henry, I suspect you, well, you have a front four, I guess.
Yeah.
I suspect I know what for. What kind of, I guess, instruction and style and strategy are you going to give them? Is it going to be as free-flowing as Josh's?
Yeah, I would agree. The suggestion of playing Lacazette as a second striker came up in the Twitter questions earlier today, and I would suggest almost playing him in such a position. Arsenal play incredibly narrow for the most part. The width is provided by the fullbacks anyway. So even if we play with this kind of fluid attack, I don't think someone defensively, one of Lacazette or Aubameyang, would have to sacrifice themselves for the team. But going forward, there's no sacrifice involved. But I think that you certainly can fit both players into the team, especially with the way that we play, as for the most part, we are still an intricate passing team that will hold the ball for long periods of time around the penalty area and we're a team that will try and break teams down.
I agree. So I mean, the four is Aubameyang, Lacazette, Ozil, Mkhitaryan.
Yeah.
LMAO. For those that hadn't got that. I'm very much the same. I'm playing the same front four with the discipline too, but I'm not really giving them formation. More my inclination, and I believe this is the only way that you can play all four, is if defensively Wenger says, right, we're going to play a really high line and we're basically just going to press just relentlessly. We're just going to play really high up. We're going to press everything and we're going to play really high intensity, high energy, and we're just going to outrun you, outwork you. We're going to suffocate you. We're going to kind of keep hammering down. We're just going to be absolutely relentless, absolutely incessant, and kind of starve the life out of the game. Very much like City do when they've not got the ball. It'd be a bit different with the ball, but when they've not got the ball.
I mean, I made reference to this in the last podcast. We have the personnel in order to do that when you consider the fact that Hector Bellerin is an Olympic sprinter. Mustafi and Koscielny are very athletic for their positions. Monreal excels, when asked to play high up the field. Ramsey's incredibly athletic, can run all day. Xhaka, exception.
Maitland-Niles.
El Neni. Mkhitaryan and Ozil, as you said last time, they seem to do a lot better when the ball is in front of them from a defensive standpoint. Aubameyang obviously comes from the high press system at Dortmund. And Lacazette, well, as I've mentioned last week, he offers more athleticism than Giroud, so therefore he's more of a he's a positive in that regard.
Yep. Yeah. We got a couple of questions on whether it's possible to fit Ramsey and Wiltshire and Lacazette and Aubameyang into the same team. I think specifically the question of can you fit either pair into the team? I think the answer is yes, isn't it? Josh, yeah. With your team, you fit Wilshere and Ramsey into it, and I very much like that team. And specifically, if you're playing maybe away from home against the Spurs, i.e. this weekend, or if you're playing away from home against the Liverpool or Man City, I think that team with the added midfield steel and stability that it brings is certainly a more wise tactical decision. And obviously with mine and Henry's team, it is possible to fit Aubameyang and Lacazette in the team. You just have to do a little bit of contortion, and you have to play in a style that recognises and accentuates the skills of the particular players in those particular positions. The problem is, and I think this is probably a more pertinent question, can you fit all four in the same team? No, go on, Josh. I can see you shaking your head.
No, I was going to say, you can fit Wilshere and Ramsey in the same team. You can fit Lacazette and Aubameyang in the same team. You can't fit both of those pairs in the same team. Mm. Unless you want to just go balls to the wall and have like three defenders and that's it. So if you want to do like Koscielny, Bellerin, and Monreal back there and just go crazy, then by all means, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. The only way it would happen would be if one of Mesut Ozil or Mkhitaryan's dropped, and I don't think that's A, will ever happen, and B, I don't think it's sensible. I don't think it should ever happen either. So realistically, to fit all four in the same team is pretty tough, but I think we've proven that you can fit one of those two pairs in the team really at every single week, I would say. None of us have a Wobi in our teams. I don't think that's especially surprising, but while maybe he's not in our starting 11s, how often would you like to see him enter into the rotation at least across the season? How many games would you like to see him get? Again, fitness and injuries pending.
I mean, you have to give him his chances, but right now there's just too much talent ahead of him that I don't think you should have to pull out extra stops just to do him a favor and get him in that starting 11. I don't think he's earned a place. I don't think that's cruel to say that. I don't think he's earned a place. He really hasn't been that good this year. He's had his flashes of brilliance. I wouldn't even call it brilliant. He's had his flashes of positivity. And that doesn't guarantee you a place. And, you know, if Ramsey and Wilshere have to fight for a place, then Iwobi should not be guaranteed a place.
The one thing I will say is that one aspect of his game, which is very good, is his defending. And he may be... And he, in my opinion, should be considered for these big games. We saw against Chelsea earlier this season when we went with Lacazette and Welbeck and Iwobi as our attacking three, and it worked quite well because Welbeck and Iwobi, for the most part, neutralised Chelsea's wing-backs going forwards. So, again, there's nothing wrong with having role players, but I completely agree with everything Josh had to say for the most part. There are superior players ahead of him, and he hasn't done anything to deserve of a place. Very promising talent still. Seems as though we've been saying that for a couple of years, but right now he's still not quite there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think he does help defensively. I think the problem is, if you bring him in and play a defensive kind of mindset and strategy, then you're harnessing and restricting and limiting a lot of the strengths of the other players around him. So if you play a defensive formation and then you have Mkhitaryan and Mesut Ozil in the same team, you're not really helping yourself. You kind of fall in between two different strategies and you'll end up doing nothing. So Wenger has to be specific to a certain type of principle, whether that be a sit deep counter-attacking type principle, or whether that be a high press, mobile, free-flowing attacking type strategy. It remains to be seen what he will do with his many, many options. Certainly, it's nice to see him have so many options. Arsenal very, very rarely have this high number of quality players. I think. We also got a question from Skork at Transfer Skork. Do you think we can play Lacazette out wide? Would you entertain that idea, or would you only rather see him in the middle?
For me, it goes back to a lot of what we said earlier. There's no real tactical shape. It might be a case of him sacrificing himself from a defensive standpoint, but only then, really, because as soon as we have the ball, he can take up a more central position and make those late runs and make those clever runs to finish off moves. So yes and no, weirdly. I hate talking about tactics because they're so complex.
I think absolutely not. If you put him on the wings, it's like a slap in the face. It's like you failed us already, and he hasn't. If you're going to play him, you play him in a two-striker role, which you absolutely should be doing. I know my ideal 11 didn't have that, but like I said, I switched because I had the Tottenham game in mind. I do think that going forward, our best option is to have both strikers out there because, you know, if you don't use one or the other, it's such a waste, and this team does not have the room to be wasteful right now. I like the idea that you save Lacazette for if you get in a pinch late in the game, but I mean, he provides essentially the same kind of thing that Aubameyang does, so it's not like you're even gaining that much by saving him as a late sub. So just start him from the onset.
Completely agree.
Yeah, I agree. We did get a few questions talking about the Spurs game. We'll discuss that in our next section. One final question for both of you from Next Generation AFC at Scouting Indoors. Who should be our captain next season? And I think this is a really interesting question. Henry, what do you think? Or who do you think?
Of course, Per Mertesacker is retiring at the end of the season and he's going to be taking charge of the academy. I think there are a number of candidates. Lankoszczelny, Petacek. Petacek, I would deem more of a leader than Koscielny. Jack Wilshere. I like Granit Xhaka's character, but I don't think he's good enough as a player to warrant being given the armband. I think that's an understatement. He's not good enough as of right now, especially. Maybe Aaron Ramsey, maybe even Mesut Ozil, possibly. I mean, David Silva's captain at Man City.
Josh is throwing his hands up in the air at this. There's absolute derision thrown towards.
I'm throwing pins against the wall too. It's driving me nuts.
Yeah,
but there are so many players. I think we do lack a leader. I would love to give it to Jack, but I hate the idea of giving it to someone who is not a guaranteed week in, week out starter. And even though he's a very good player, if we have this personnel, I don't think he's a guaranteed week in, week out starter.
Josh, what do you think? There was a lot of names around there.
Yeah, I feel like just to be obstinate, I should make a case for Granit Xhaka, but I won't because I'm better than that. I do think that Xhaka has captain potential, but I agree. He's not doing enough on the pitch right now to merit being a captain. I mean, you have to throw Mustafi in the discussion because he coordinates that defense better than anyone else that we have. But my ideal captain would be Aaron Ramsey because they've talked about it in the past. Arsene Wenger has tossed the idea around in the past. I think this is a guy who is very appreciative of the club, who understands the club, who really wants to be here. And he just, whenever he's on his game, he just has this aura of him that's so positive. He's such a positive player. And I think that's a quality that we need in a captain very badly. I don't think Koscielny brings that. I don't think Petr Cech brings that. I would love to give it to Wilshere, but kind of like what Henry said, I don't think that he's at the point yet where he should be considered. I think vice captain, sure. And I, you know, it's hard to say that because he did just come out and say it's his dream to be Arsenal captain. But you know, then you run into the problem. Well, if you give it to Ramsey, when then will Wilshere become captain?
Yeah.
But I mean, this is stuff you worry about down the road. For now, I say Ramsey's the best choice.
I mean, one more suggestion I would possibly throw out there is Nacho Monreal leads by example with his performances more often than not. He's not really a vocal leader, which you could argue that Arsenal have been lacking. Pundits have certainly been making that argument for a long time, and I don't blame them, but he he is someone who certainly leads by example on a weekly basis. So I wouldn't discard him as a possibility either.
Yeah, no, that's a name that isn't very often thrown around in these kind of discussions. It's quite an interesting one. Personally, for me, it's Jack Wilshere, and nobody else comes close. I'm giving it to the player, even if he's not guaranteed to start, I'm giving it to the player who is the most passionate about this football club, who is the most committed to this football club, and in terms of his character and his attitude, is the most driven towards succeeding as an Arsenal player, and specifically Arsenal player, not just player. And there is nobody in this squad who loves Arsenal more, has a stronger relationship with Arsenal, has a greater commitment to the club than Jack Wilshere. And even if that means he doesn't play every game, I think you look at Per Mertesacker, he's hardly played this year, yeah. He's been club captain, and I don't necessarily think it's that much of an issue. And I do think we overboil, I guess, the discussion of who the captain should be. Is the bigger problem is you should have captain-like characters in yeah. your squad. That you don't have to be the captain to be the leader of the team. Yeah. You just have to have the characteristics and the personalities and the communication skills to be able to do that. Go on, Josh.
Yeah, I do think that it has a way of bringing out the best in players. I think
that's true.
If anyone would benefit from it the most, I think it'd be Wilshere. I think he would be even more driven than he ever has been before. And I don't know if he would have that same effect on some players. I don't know what more Ramsey could give. I think that if you ask him to do more as a captain, I can't imagine anything that he would do better, or at least that he would try harder at. Not that Wilshere doesn't try hard. I just think that it would bring out even more passion from him, which, to go along with your point, he is a fantastic candidate and a close second for me. I still think Ramsey has the passion and the drive to do the captaincy, but I do like the idea of Wilshere.
I didn't state a preference, but depending on what Andy has said, the more and more I listen to arguments such as that, I would have to lean towards Jack Wilshere. Apologies for cutting you off there, Andy. It was completely unintentional.
No. I was literally saying I agree, so you cut me off from nothing. the one name that we've not talked about is the current team captain, at least, and that's Lauren Koscielny. He is, by virtue, the next man in line, I guess, to take over from Per Mertesacker. I think that's probably what Wenger will go with. He loves Koscielny. Would you be disappointed if that was the case? We'll go to you, Josh.
I would be. Not disappointed in the sense that I would lose my mind and have to change teams or something, but I do grow tired of Arsene Wenger's captain policy of, well, who's the oldest? It's kind of like an honorarium. It's like, oh, well, the next oldest person gets to be captain now. I you're right. The captaincy doesn't make that much of a difference. You should have captain qualities all over the pitch. But I think back to all the time, you know, other teams have had these prolific captains that have been there for ages. I mean, I think of Tony Adams. He was here forever. He was the last really great long-term captain that we had. I don't know why we steer away from that. I think it really establishes who the leader of the club is, and when you do that over a long period of time, I feel like it helps build the team's identity more than if you just kind of hand off the armband to who's ever the oldest or whoever's been here the longest. That's not what it's supposed to be about.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he used to just give it to the player who was most likely to leave in the desperate hope that it would convince them to stay.
So you're hoping that Xhaka gets it next so he can leave?
Yeah, let's give it to Xhaka.
It went
from Henri, didn't it, to Fabregas, to Van Persie, to anyone else who was...
William Gallas?
Yes,
oh,
Gallas.
Gosh, yeah, Gallas had it for a bit.
He was definitely
crying
not
when he
captain.
Cried against yeah. Birmingham.
Oh, that was the same day Eduardo broke his leg, God bless him, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2-2. Gael Clichy mucked up, as always. Eduardo broke his leg and William Gallas cried and Arsenal's title hopes were over. That was the day.
We were still
top of the table after that. I think we had about a one or two point lead after the loss. Oh, after the draw, sorry. And that was the moment when I realised Arsenal weren't going to win. At that point, I was like, well, Arsenal aren't going to win the league this year. That's just not going to happen. And they've never won it since. Nice to end on a nice positive note. they are all the questions, at least not related to the Spurs game. We'll pick up a couple in the next part. Thank you very much for getting in contact with us. We always love to hear from you guys. And again, like we said, we'll put more shouts out on Twitter and stuff like that before we record. And we want to be able to answer as many of your questions as possible to the best of our somewhat limited abilities. Anyway, we have a North London derby to talk about. So we will see you in just a sec where we preview Arsenal's power-grabbing win on Saturday afternoon. Hello and welcome to part three of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. We have reviewed the wonders of the battering of Everton 5-1. We are now going to review the inevitable battering of Spurs on Saturday. Now that I've said that, put all your money on a 4-0 Arsenal loss. We got we'll talk about kind of what we think Wenger will do in a sec. We got one Twitter question that I'd like to address primarily from Mohamed Ahmed at Breedsers. He says, against Spurs, three at the back or four at the back, very simply. We'll do what we would like to see and what we think we will see. So, Josh, what do you think?
I think you have to do four at the back. As I said in my ideal 11, I think that this game is going to be won or lost in the midfield, and I think that we really need to have more bodies there. So I would go four at the back, and I think Arsene Wenger will do the same.
Henry?
I would go with the lineup that Josh suggested as his preferred lineup for this game. Bring Jack Wilshere in for that Arsenal tenacity, if you will. I don't fancy us in this game, yeah, but I prefer if we did go with that extra midfielder or that deeper midfielder.
Yeah, I'll throw out one reason to potentially consider a back three. Pochettino has sometimes played a back three against Spurs. And I think if he does the same thing this weekend, I would rather see Wenger match him up man for man.
Yeah.
And say, well, I just think my players are better than your players, and we'll just be the same across the board and see what happens. Obviously, Wenger doesn't know what Pochettino is going to do, so that's quite difficult to envisage and therefore implement. But that is one argument for potentially playing a back three rather than a back four. But I think really it will be surprising if Arsenal don't play back four. I think it will be back four pretty much for the rest of the season now, especially given the signings of Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to look at, though, really, are you worried by this Spurs team? And if so, who worries you? Josh, you're the primarily optimistic of us, so I'll let you go first.
I mean, it would be irresponsible to say they're not worrying. They have enough talent. They have enough talent to always be worrying. That said, I mean, obviously Harry Kane worries you. I think Sung Hyun Min worries me, just because if there's one way we get beat, it's through those seemingly simple runs through our defense that Spurs actually do very well with Eriksen. And I do think that there are going to be plenty of opportunities for Spurs to exploit that space. I mean, we even saw Everton creating that space and finding that space. They just didn't do as much with it. But Tottenham will. If you give them that space, they will make the most of it.
Yeah. For me, Eriksen's the guy I want to stop, because I think he's their kind of their pendulum almost. He really makes them tick. I think if you can disrupt him and disrupt his rhythm, then a lot... I wouldn't say he's necessarily their most dangerous player, but I think if there's one player that you can stop and you stop the whole threat, I would say it's Eriksen. What do you think, Henry?
I mean, I completely agree with everything that you say, but I am still very worried about their midfield, or their deeper midfield. I think Dembele, even though he hasn't had the best of seasons, is a very good player.
I agree.
And I think they could out-muscle our midfield if they play with either Dier or Wanyama alongside Dembele. I'm not sure who's going to start, but I always have that fear. They have that combination of guile up top, but they also have that element of physicality in the middle of the park, which I don't think we have.
I mean, this is the same thing that we were saying before the last time we faced Spurs, though, is that we thought we were going to get bossed in the middle of the pitch. Yeah. And honestly, I did too, but we didn't. We stepped up. We actually controlled their midfield. And if anything, I think we're more capable to handle it now than we were back then.
Yep, Granit Xhaka the bruiser.
Absolutely.
No concurrence, so we don't have anyone likely to...
No. I do think Josh's point is a good one. And we do give Xhaka a lot of flack, obviously, but... Actually, he does, in terms of his size and his stature, he is a bigger player than most of the Arsenal midfielders. And that does give them at least an ability to almost match up to Spurs' physicality. I agree,
Is that a compliment?
It's not a not compliment.
That's a double negative.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm basically saying he's tall.
You could watch a movie on his back.
Yeah. It's essentially, my point is that he's bigger than other people. But Spurs definitely, if they really wanted to kind of close up, they could play Dembele, Dier, and Wanyama, and really just go with the real big powerhouse and say, we're just going to bully you. And whether that would work or not, I don't know. But there is cause for concern. But certainly the presence of Xhaka. And the engine of Ramsey, they have the ability to be able to deal with it. Whether they can or not is a very other question. Harry Kane has a pretty good record against Arsenal. He has a pretty good record against almost everybody. Henry, how do you stop perhaps the best number nine in world football right now?
I don't know how. And that's what makes him so scary, I think. He excels in any kind of game. I think he can play on the break, but I also think he can hold the ball up pretty well. I thought for the most part Virgil van Dijk did a good job on him yesterday in that regard, but I still think he could possibly bully our centre-backs. But I don't know how you stop him. He is so, so good, and it pains me to say it.
Yeah.
I think you stick Skrodan Mustafi on him and tell him, pretend like he's a Chelsea striker, and then he just disappears. Because for whatever reason, Mustafi has this really amazing ability to just completely negate a Chelsea striker. And they've had good strikers. I mean, he's done it to Diego Costa, to Morata. Obviously, I think Kane is a bit better than those
Giroud.
Two. He'll do it to Giroud.
He'll be doing it to Giroud, yeah.
But, I mean, he's scary, obviously, but... I mean, I always go back to he's not going to beat you with pace, and he's not going to beat you with strength. If you really just focus in on him, I do think he can be negated. I don't think he's like Aubameyang, who can really beat you with that pace, where you can't always be ready for that. Again, I don't think you can necessarily be fully ready for what Harry Kane brings, but I do think you can put in a game plan that can really target him specifically, if that's your goal. He can be stopped, because he doesn't have any... overwhelming physical attributes.
I would agree. I think personally, I think the way you stop him, and I kind of hinted at this earlier, I think you stop the service to him, really, and you try and separate him from the rest of his team. So especially Eriksen, his combination play with Eriksen is wonderful at times. You try and disrupt Eriksen, and you try and stop Spurs getting into those wide channels and whipping crosses into the box that he's so dangerous from. For me, that would be how I stop Harry Kane. Would actually be, I don't stop Harry Kane, I stop those around him. Because I think it's depressing to say, but he's a truly outstanding player. And he will score goals, and he will cause problems. And sometimes you have to admit that and say, well, actually, how can we circumnavigate his own abilities? Well, maybe we take on other weaknesses in the team and try and accentuate them to such a advantage that Kane then becomes... kind of a non-factor. It remains to be seen what happens. It remains to be seen how Wenger will play it. I'm sure Pochettino will have a trick up his sleeve. He's quite willing to chop and change his tactics, isn't he, for different games. And you know, he regularly switches between a back three and a back four, and he's willing to drop and change players as and when. So it'll be interesting to see how he navigates Arsenal's abilities. Are there any Arsenal players, other than obviously kind of the obvious ones, are there any maybe less focused on Arsenal players that you are especially looking forward to watching or think will have a big influence on this game? We'll get to you, Henry.
I'm interested to see whether Mkhitaryan or Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang can do it in a big game. In a big, big game. If we win this, we're right back in it. And our top four chances are slim, but I don't think we can afford to drop many, if any, points if we have any ambition of making the top four.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. What about you, Josh?
I would actually say the exact same thing because, you know, I think the primary concern with this match is that it's away. And it's at Wembley, so it's not really a Spurs home, but it is an away match, which is all just become such a problem for Arsenal. But I think that the advantage they get here is that Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang haven't been a part of those away woes. They don't have that negative psyche from not being able to reach their full abilities away from home. So I do think that, you know, if there's a silver lining to be found in this away match, it's that we have two of our best players all of a sudden that haven't been a part of those away problems. And I think that's really going to play to our advantage because it's all about confidence. And if other players see these two guys driving the team with confidence, then it's going to settle into them that, you know, away matches aren't really that bad after all. They're just the same game played at a different ground.
Yeah. One point I'd like to make on the away troubles, and I'll give it a couple of perhaps lesser known players as a kind of guide to watching this game, but the Emirates pitch is very, very big. It's pretty much the biggest in the Premier League. It's one of the biggest in the world. It's right at the maximum kind of restrictions that you can have for a football pitch. And I wonder if Arsenal, that they get more space at the Emirates just by virtue of it being bigger. And I wonder when they go away and they go and play on smaller pitches where the surface isn't quite as good and the ball doesn't move quite as quickly and the space that Ozil or Mkhitaryan or Ramsey or Wilshere or whoever it may be receives in centre of the park is a little bit restricted. I wonder if that has an influence on their game. Perhaps it's a reason for their away troubles, or at least a factor in why they struggle so much away from home. Because like you said, you're playing the same sport. There's no difference in terms of the rules or anything, or the players aren't any different. They're all the same. It's complete contrast in what they able to do at the Emirates and what they're able to do at every other stadium. In regards to a couple of players to watch out for, I think the two fullbacks, Monreal and Bellerin, they'll have a very difficult job, specifically because of the Spurs fullbacks, and they like to use them a lot getting forward, whether that be Aurier or Trippier or Davis or Rose. I don't know which two Pochettino will play, but he'll play two of them. They really bombard those overlapping runs a lot, and I think Monreal and Bellerin will have quite a busy day. And if either of them gets overloaded on one side, Spurs could have quite a lot of joy down that wide channel. So that's something to keep in mind and something to watch. Both of them will have to have good games if Arsenal to have a clean sheet. That is absolutely certain. Finally, Henry, you alluded to this. You obviously think with a win, Arsenal are at least giving themselves a chance of a top four place. Do you think that if they don't win, even if it's a draw, do you think if they don't win that rules them out of a top four position?
Well, I've been of the mindset that we've been outsiders in the race for a long time. I don't see why any supposed negative results, if you will, this weekend changes that.
Yeah, what about you, Josh?
Of course, I'm always going to say I don't think they're out of it. I still think it's...
What about if they lost?
If they lost, I mean, that's tough because then you'd go, what, seven back to Tottenham, depending on Liverpool's result, potentially eight, I believe, back on them. That's really hard to overcome. But you look at the game still to play. Liverpool still have to go to United, go to Chelsea, go to Everton. They play at Southampton next, which won't be that easy of a game. Tottenham still have to go to Chelsea, play City, and obviously play us this time around. So it's not like there aren't points to be dropped. These are two teams that have been just as, maybe not just as inconsistent as us, but inconsistent regardless. I don't think it's too late, even if we lose, I don't think it's too late to rule out still making a run for it.
Yeah, I think Arsenal can get in the top four. I do think they have to win, though, more for kind of confidence and kind of personality and just kind of momentum sake more than just the points. I think they have to go out and make a statement in this game. And if they win and they win well, they suddenly announce themselves as a real threat, especially if Aubameyang or Mkhitaryan or both have a really good game. They suddenly announce themselves because this is, yeah, this is a, could very well fashion themselves as a new Arsenal team. You know, Mesut Ozil staying, Mkhitaryan's come, Aubameyang's come, Ramsey's back in the team, Wiltshire's at full strength now. This is a different Arsenal team to the ones that were toiling through the festive period. If they can go and win well and make that statement, then suddenly that changes quite a lot for the remainder of the year. If they can't, then maybe those questions, those same questions that were being asked just 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, maybe they're still very pertinent now. Last thing to ask both of you. Henry, we'll come to you first. Score prediction and why?
I think 2-1 Tottenham, simply because I think they'll be really up for it, especially with us beating them first time round. And I just think still we have inconsistencies that haven't been addressed.
Yeah. Who do you think scores for Spurs? Do you think it's Kane?
Yeah, him and... Just him.
Just Kane.
Yeah, just him.
Josh, what about you?
I'm going to go a big 3-1 to Arsenal. Whew! Yeah, I know, it's crazy. But I don't think Spurs are up for it. I haven't seen from them this killing mentality. And not that I've seen it from Arsenal, but all we have to base off what they're capable of is what we saw against Everton. What we saw against Everton was complete cutthroat play. I mean, we were sticking it to them. And yeah, you can say they weren't really up for it, Everton weren't, but you still have to go through it. You still have to actually score the goals, and they did it. And they did it really easily. And I don't think that it's going to cause us as many problems to play against Spurs, especially away, as history would suggest with this new look that we have.
Yeah, I'm also going to predict an Arsenal win.
Oh.
It's not. I'm not quite going 3-1. I'll go a 2-1 win. Or maybe even, 2-1, not 2-0. A 2-1 Arsenal win. And I'm not really sure why. I just kind of think, I don't know, I'm just buzzing off of Arsenal at the moment. And I just it happens so rarely. I'm just riding this wave of hope and anticipation for the future.
So you've left me, Andy, and you've now joined the evil empire of optimism. That is Josh Shipping.
Evil. Optimism is evil.
Optimism is evil.
Only temporarily. I suspect on Monday, after Arsenal get absolutely pummeled by Spurs, I'll be right back to the norm of being negative.
Well, that's a great way to end it, isn't it?
yeah. Certainly, it will be an interesting North London derby. There's a lot to play for in terms of the recognition of both teams, the power struggle that is so often, you know, bandied around in the media, and obviously the table. If Spurs win and they go, 7 points clear, that's quite a big gap, really. So it's going to be a massive game. I'm really, really, actually, I'm really looking forward to it. Is there anything else either of you want to dread over before we close?
No, thank you.
Nope.
Right, excellent. Well, let's end there. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. I've been Henry and Josh, and my name's Andrew. You can find us on Twitter. If you search for Pain in the Arsenal, you can find us at paininthearsenal.com as well. Please ask us any questions. We love to hear from you guys, and we love to try and answer them as best as we can on the show. So we will see you next Monday, Tuesday, I guess, after the North London derby, when Arsenal inevitably are 1 point behind Spurs after Aubameyang scores a hat-trick.
Yes.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.